this is Kirk, and I'm filling in for Yada today on the Shattering Myth program. And, of course, as most of y'all know, this is a show that's dedicated to all of those who are around the world who know that the institutions, our institutions, political, our institutions in religious, religions, economics, and militaristic programs are all extremely corrupt. They're broken. And, quite frankly, they can't be fixed. But that being said, all hope is not lost. Yahweh, the creator of the universe, not only saw what we would become and what our impending doom would be and how we would destroy the world, but reported what he had witnessed and left a record for us so that we might escape that end and dwell with him as part of his family, safe and secure, and loved forever. And today what I'll be joined, of course, with the talented producer and what I consider to be the world's most important radio producer, Scott. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing well. You give me too much credit.
No. You know, today what I was hoping to do, I thought we might explore, is that marvelous escape plan. And if I'm going to find that escape plan, Scott, where do you suppose I might turn? What document might I turn to find that information?
The Torah.
The Torah. That was too easy.
That was easy, yeah. You said it would be easy questions. I'm with you 100% already.
Now, a lot of people disagree, of course. Are you absolutely positive? Because there's about 2.5 billion people who think is the new, even though I call it the new totally contradicting testament. They seem there's 2.5 billion of them, and they think that's the best document to go to. So we can rule that one out?
I would, yeah.
Okay. How about the Quran? There's 1.5 billion people who think that's the answer.
I wouldn't go that route either.
Okay. Book of Mormon. A lot of people, that's pretty popular.
They are nice people, but they're wrong too.
And then if we went all the way through the list, we'd have things like the Rabbi's Talmud. I mean, that's a Jewish document. You would think that would have a lot of validity, but basically, it's just an argument against the Torah.
It still doesn't have the certainty of the Torah. Yeah.
No, that's right. So we could go to Buddha, we could go to Confucius, or we could go to the infallibility of the popes and their decrees, and we might find it there, huh?
Well, I mean, I guess Buddha would be right, because they just think everything ends and that's it. So, I mean,
there's some truth to that.
Yeah, they could be right, I guess. So they might get what they want.
Well,
but I would still stick with the original answer.
I think so, too. For those that might be new, I was going to give you a definition of the Torah, so we know what we're talking about here. And the Torah means teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction. And I'm sorry, there is no law in there. I know most everyone would, in the English-speaking world at least, they would think of the Torah as being law. But we'll find that there's absolutely nothing about it. There's not even a misdemeanor in there. So if you're looking for it as a law to live by, that's not that's an inappropriate perspective on it. I did find, Scott, I did find that the oldest known in all my research, the oldest definition I have of the Torah, it said it is simply teaching, and that which points you in the direction that you must go to live. And I thought that was about as good a definition of the Torah as I could ever find. Would you agree with me on that one?
That's a solid definition. I like it. I'll go with that definition from now on.
So we can at least say teaching, teaching, teaching. He's trying to teach us something, and these are his, and this is the way he has written, the things he's written down are there to teach us. Now, I like to go to the ancient, the oldest language, the oldest alphabet known to the world, which is the ancient Hebrew. And just before we began on launch our program here, I wanted to just go over the four letters that make up the word Torah. And the first one, of course, is a tau, and a tau is like a T, like a capital T. And it is a mark, it's considered a mark and a sign. The letters in Hebrew, in ancient Hebrew, also have meanings, as well as when you connect them together, they make up the words. So each one of the letters, when you break it down, that makes up the word Torah, has some significant meanings to each one of those. And the mark and the sign starts with the T, the tau, and the second letter in there is a rosh, and a rosh is a man's head, and it is the man who is generally considered to be a man who is observing things. He's using his eyes, he's using his ears, and he's using his brain to consider things. The third letter is a tent peg. It's called a wah, and it's the OW sound, and it is a what we use to secure the family home or to secure the tent to the Bedouin people. Many, many, many years ago, 3,500 years ago, Abraham would have used that to enlarge his tent and also to make it secure in the wind. And the last letter, of course, is a hay. And a hay, if you are not familiar with the pictographs, is a man or a woman standing up, a person standing up, beholding something marvelous with his hands in the air and engaged and able to walk. So what you have is a sign with a man, for the man who observes or the person who observes, to be allowing them to be enlarged, a part of an enlarged family, a secure family, and by those and be engaged in that by standing up and walking with Yahweh. So that's in the, even in the pictographs, there's still no law. We're talking very straightforward. It's a teaching document. And quite frankly, Scott, the Torah is the only, as far as I can, I'm pretty sure I'm safe on this ground, is the only document that's both credible and provable in human existence. You can, and for those who are listening today, you can prove this to yourself by simply starting to study the Torah. And the best place, and I get asked this often, well, what Bible do I look at? Where do I go? What do I read the Torah if the current ones are so corrupted? And what I would suggest to you do is do what I was fortunate enough to run across, is go to yadayah.com, or you could go to introtogod.org. Both of those are translations from the oldest documents, from the Dead Sea Scrolls, and the oldest scripts anywhere known to mankind. And they are of course in English, and they're explained in great detail. With plus, you'll also find in there how to translate the documents for yourself. Now, that was something that helped me tremendously, because I wasn't that familiar with lexicons and interlinearies and dictionaries. But once I started buying a few of them, and you, a lot of these things, by the way, are free online. And once you get these and you start to delve into it, and while you are reading yada yada, you'll be able to translate the Torah for yourself. And so the beauty of all that is that you don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to take some preacher's word for it or just anyone's word for it. You can find it right there and delve into it and get all the same information that we'll be talking about today. If you don't, there's one thing that you will, well, I should say there are two things that you really need to have in order to get a lot out of this. And those two things are simply the requirement that you're going to have to spend a little bit of time and a little bit of effort. And you have to do it consistently. One of our friends is JB, and JB often says that if you only have a little bit of time each day, spend a half an hour a day. If you only have a few hours a week, then spend a few hours a week. But consistently go through these words of Yahweh and carefully consider them and keep studying. And also what you'll have to have, the second thing that is absolutely important, is to have an open mind. You have to kind of become devoid from all this, what would you call it, Scott, this, where we've been indoctrinated, perhaps, that's probably the best word. And we have to throw that out a little bit and just have an open mind and start reading and see where the words take us. Do you think that would be fair?
Yeah, seems fair. Seems reasonable.
So what I'd like to do, just so you realize that it's just not me making this stuff up, I'm going to show you, I'm going to read to you Psalm 19:7. And this is what Yahweh has to say about what I just said. He says that Yahweh's Torah, he's speaking in first person, Yahweh's Torah is complete and entirely perfect with no defects, returning and restoring the soul. He says that Yahweh's testimony is trustworthy and reliable, making understanding and obtaining wisdom simple for the open-minded and the receptive. So I think I'm pretty safe on this ground to go ahead and approach it that way. And that's all we need. He didn't say you have to be a genius about this. You don't have to be a great translator. I'm certainly not. But I can certainly look up words and see what Yahweh had to say and gain from and learn from that teaching. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about as well. Or rather, one other part that I would like to read to you as well. And that is from Yashayah. Now, the Yashayah is a prophet known as Isaiah. And in 51:4, which is in the English Bible, he is revealed, the prophet Yashayah reveals what Yahweh said. And he says, listen and pay attention to me so that you respond appropriately to me, my family and my people. To me, he says, this is Yahweh always talking in the first person. To me, listen carefully, considering, weighing, testing, evaluating, and thinking about what you hear. And then respond, because the Torah, the source of teaching and guidance from me, shall be brought forth and shall be disseminated in my means to justify resolved disputes, will accordingly shine upon and enlighten the family. So from my starting comment was that we're going to explore what the Torah has to say and find this escape plan from this world that's absolutely gone mad. And we're in pretty heady stuff, because Yahweh says exactly how to do it, where to go to find it, and that if we have an open mind, we will be totally satisfied with the answers that we get. Two areas I hope to spend a little bit of time with today as we proceed are, and I realize this is a little bit of a long introduction, Scott, but I wanted to cover some things just to make sure everybody knows that I'm going right to the source as far as what Yahweh said. And so when we go to these 10 statements written in stone, and hopefully if we have time later to cover the covenant family relationship, that we're approaching it the way that Yahweh has told us to do. But when we return, we'll start with a little bit with the 10 statements written in stone. Well, where we left off a moment ago is we were beginning to look at, or we were beginning our journey on studying the 10 statements written in stone. Now, those 10 statements are often called the 10 commandments, but as you're going to find today, is they're not commandments. They are suggestions. They are statements on how to live and how to become part of Yahweh's family. And these two stones were given to Moshe, which means to draw out, Moshe being Moses on Mount Horeb. And to a degree, I hope to touch on also a little bit later the actual covenant family agreement that was presented to Abraham. At that time, he was originally known as Abram, or father, and he was later known as Abraham, which means merciful father. And those were, all that information about Abraham was also dictated to Moshe, and Moshe wrote that on a scroll, and both of the items were put in the ark. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but when somebody writes something in stone, I would think that the implication is that they want it to be the last, they want it to be permanent. Would that be your assessment?
Yeah, that'd be my assessment. Pretty hard to fix your mistake when you're writing in stone.
In fact, in the old days, you know, during after the Depression, they started building all the banks and things in these giant granite buildings because they wanted to be solid. They want people. Whenever you want something to look like it's permanent and it wants to last forever, you put it in stone. So Yahweh is talking to us on putting this information in stone. Now, the scrolls, on the other hand, that he gave the information where Moshe didn't write it down. He was just a scribe. Yahweh quoted to him the Torah, and he wrote it all down. And in fact, it's quite interesting, you know, if we didn't have the Torah, can you think of any document that would tell us who Abraham was?
I'm sorry, what was that?
If you were trying to find out about Abraham and you didn't have the Torah, is it any place you could go to where you would find out who Abraham was and what in the covenant relationship, what the offer was?
I guess I'm not really sure.
Well, actually, there is no book whatsoever that mentions Abraham except those that were written after the Torah was written. So if we were looking for Abraham's family, and I bring that up because they always talk about Abrahamic religions, you know, like Christianity is supposedly an Abrahamic religion, and the Islam is an Abrahamic religion, but without the Torah, there isn't any mention of Abraham. So we would know he would be a rather insignificant person had it not been, had Yahweh not given us that information, and had Moshe write it down. So the source of most of the knowledge that everybody seems to think of, and the reputation that they use of being connected to this, can only come from the Torah to begin with, and then they unfortunately twist it. So in any case, the stones, the 10 stones, as we delve into these translations, which we'll get to in just a second, one will discover some pretty interesting stuff. And what I found very, very interesting about these two documents, the tablets of stone that Yahweh, I'm going to take a little sidestep here before we get to it. I know I'm a little long-winded today, but I think you'll enjoy this. The tablets of stone were placed in an ark, in the Ark of the Covenant. Also, the scroll that was dictated by Yahweh and was written by Moshe was wrapped up and stuck on the side of the Ark of the Covenant. I found it kind of interesting. I wanted to see what Ark was. And Scott, when you hear the word Ark, what do you think the Ark is? What is the definition of an Ark?
Well, I think two things actually.
Okay.
One, I think of Noah and the ark, mm-hmm. Large floating ship. Mm-hmm. And then I also, for some reason, I know it's not an ark, but I think of arches. I think of a large floating ship first.
That's pretty close. There's actually two words that are translated in English from ark. There's two words for ark, and I looked them up yesterday just out of curiosity as I was thinking about these things, and this is what I found. The first one we're going to do is the Ark of the Covenant, and that is written with the root letters, which is an aleph and a roach. And an aleph and a roach is a and an R, and it means the oldest definition, and the oldest definition is going to be box and light. And we will return to that in just a moment. Right before the break, we were talking about the ark. And there are two arks mentioned in the Torah. And one, obviously, you were absolutely correct. There's the ark of the ark that Noah's ark. And then there's the Ark of the Covenant. And we're going to start with the Ark of the Covenant. And I looked them up trying to figure out the oldest meanings as well as how it was written in the ancient Hebrew alphabet. And is the root word for ark is A-R, aleph, roach. The aleph, of course, is the ram's head, the one that is stands for authority, for power, for protection. And the rosh is the head of a man or head of a person, a woman, that that uses their eyes and their ears to hear and their eyes to see and their brain to process information as well as their mouth to respond. And the oldest meaning is a box, and it also means a light, which is quite interesting. The box, obviously it has a container. It carries a precious cargo, and the precious cargo that it carries in there, I would surmise, is light. We are enlightened in the world by the information that's in there. Now the Hebrew word for Ark of the Covenant, the actual word for Ark of the Covenant is a little bit longer. It has a couple more letters in it. That was the root we were talking about, the root, the first two letters that are the root of that word. And when you add to that, you add a wa, which is a tent peg, and a nun, which is a little symbol that looks like a sperm, then you have the word for the Ark of the Covenant, which is, surprisingly, is Aaron, which we know Aaron was Moshe's brother, and he's always translated his name as enlightened free will. So the Hebrew word for Ark of the Covenant is Aaron, which is enlightened free will, and it is made up of the words that mean the authority, a head who is engaged, a person who is engaged by observation, with the intent on enlarging the family. That's what the wall would represent, enlarging the family home. And the nun, definition of the nun, the letter nun, the sperm, is an inheritance. So I just, to me, I say, wow, that's sitting on just about every chord there. So, and you could also say it's the gathering of items, important items, placed in a box, placed in a place of safekeeping, or protective box. Now, there's another word, Scott, for Ark that Noah had, and that's a Baha. And a Baha is a two-letter word. It starts with a B, which is a bet. And I know you've heard this before, but for the audience, maybe some new folks and all, a bet is the second letter in the alphabet. That's where we get alphabet. The bet is a pictograph of the family home or a tent with a doorway in. And we usually think of that when we see that in this context. Of course, we would think of that as a family home. And the second letter is a ha, or a hey, rather. And you pronounce it Baha. And the hey, of course, is a person standing up, engaged with Yahweh, able to walk, with their legs separated, walking, and also with their hands up, perhaps, looking and beholding a great sight. So you have a family home and people engaged with Yahweh. And the oldest definition for Baha, I found, was an empty space needing to be filled. And I thought that was a lovely concept, personally. What do you think?
I like the picture that it paints, and I like how each letter has its own story that it tells. So yeah, I like that picture as well.
It does. It's the fun for me, and besides just translating words, which we can all do, is when you also get to the letters, then you can just peel back another layer and you see some of the most beautiful, beautiful things that are written in these letters as well. It just blows me away sometimes as I keep looking and looking and looking and say, wow, I would have never thought to look up Ark until I started saying, well, if you're going to talk about where they are and what the where the stones, the ten statements on the stones are housed, and then you read Ark and then you look up Ark and you say, wow. So now I may be I'm going to risk boring the listeners a little bit because I do want to read another verse from the Torah, and this time it's going to be from Bar Midbar, which means in the wilderness, which is called Numbers in an English Bible. And you know, before I do, I don't know why they call it Numbers, and in Bible it's such a terrible term. I wanted just to mention that Bible comes from Biblios, and Biblios is a pagan sun god. I believe it's the daughter of a pagan sun god, Egyptian sun god. And I don't know why you would name God's word. Surely God would never name his words, his statements, and his Torah. He was certainly not naming it after a pagan sun god, but for some reason they do. So I'm going to try. So every time I say Bible, you correct me, okay? And we just go back to saying Torah. So I'd like to read to you let's hear what Yahweh had to say. And he said, there is one engraved prescription for living, and that there are the tablets of stones. And for all of you to approach, let me read this, make it a little bit clearer. There is one engraved prescription for living. That was our quest again when we started this, is to find the escape, the plan to avoid the world as it's falling apart. There is one engraved prescription for living for all of you to approach for the assembled community. Now, this was Moshe talking to the people at Mount Horeb, but he was also talking to all of us because it's not written in a particular space and time. It's for all of us to learn. For all of you to approach for the assembled community and for those from different races and different places. Scott, that doesn't sound like something that's exclusive to the Jews or the Yehudim to me, does it?
Not at all.
No, he says different races in different places. So we're not talking about something that is no longer valuable. He clearly communicates and he described prescriptions that Moshe described, what Yah had dictated for living together is everlasting and eternal. So he's offered it to everyone. He wants every race and from all the different races, and from all the different places. He's offered this opportunity in the Torah to a prescription for living. He continues on to say the clearly communicated and inscribed prescriptions for living together is everlasting and eternal. The word he used there was olam, and for all the generations, it is exactly the same for you as for the foreigner and the newcomer. This is, and always exists, as the means to approach and the presence of Yahweh. So we've got all the different people from all the different places and races, as well as the Yehudim, of course, the chosen people. The prescriptions for living are in the Torah. They're everlasting. They're eternal. He used the word olam, which means forever and ever, everlasting. For all the generations. Now, last time I heard, all generations meant all generations, all the ones that had come before, all the ones that exist now, and any that were able to come afterwards. And he said it's exactly the same for the foreigner and the newcomer. So anyone who's discovering this for the first time, the same path that we need to get on to in order to approach Yahweh's presence, it's the same for them, it's the same for the foreigner, it's the same for the Yehudim, it's the same for you and me. I think that's pretty clear. Scott, am I wrong here, or is that I may have butchered it a little bit, but I think it's pretty clear. The words are, he says what he means, and he means what he says.
I'm also getting that same,
yeah,
same conclusion. Yes.
Even I can't butcher it that bad. So further he says that there's one Torah, and he says there's one means to resolve disputes, and they shall continually exist for you to approach. And for the newcomers, he reiterates, he says it again a little bit different, the next verse. One Torah and one means to resolve disputes shall continually exist. He used the word haya to exist eternally. For you to approach and for newcomers from different races and different people, places from different places, to come together, living together. So he just goes, Yahweh likes to say things over and over again so we get the point. Now, that's not a Jewish deal. That's not the type of things that the Christians preach. It's a human offer. It's an offer to the Yehuda. It's an offer to Israel. Now, sometimes when you read it, you'll find it just talks about Yehuda and Israel. But when Yahweh is talking about Israel, he is talking about the 10 tribes that formed the land that was the northern part of the kingdom called Israel. But Israel is anyone in the world who engages and endures with Yahweh, and that would be you and me. And I'm going to just break that word down just a little bit so it'll be even more plain to the listener. Yisrael is written, Yish, Y-I-S, is a human being or a person. The Ra comes from the Sarah, and Sarah, is, by definition, is to endure with and to engage with someone. And El, of course, is the word for God. And in the long version, or rather in the ancient lettering version, we have a Yod, which is a hand reaching down, symbolic of Yahweh reaching down with an open hand to lift us up. The second letter is a Shemek. And I think to get through the whole letter, we'll have to wait to the next, to the break is over. But we'll start right back there. Okay, as promised, I'm going to go back and start on Yisrael because I think it's important, especially to someone like me, because I would fit in the category of Yisrael. I am not Jewish that I'm aware of, or Yehudim. Yisrael is any of those who participate with Yahweh, who engage and endure with Yahweh. And to prove, just to go over the letters to get a little more insight into Yisrael, we have the first letter, which is a Yod, which is drawn as a arm reaching down and across and with an open hand. And that is usually symbolic of Yah reaching down and lifting us up. The second letter would be a Shin, or it could be a Shemek. Now, both of those are S sounds. A lot of times it's written, most of the time it'd be written with a Shemek, and a Shemek is an S sound where you have that is depicted as a thorn, like a thorn bush, like the thorn of crowns that Yahusha was placed on his head when he was crucified. And also it is mostly known in the ancient world as a thorn bush that is used to make a temporary fence to protect the sheep. So it is a border or a fence. The shin, it could be a shin also, but we'll go with the shemek, but it could be a shin also, which is an SH sound, which would be nourishing words. The third letter has no debate on. That's a Rosh, and that's a head that is, once again, a head that's engaged, thinking, hearing, observing, and also it has the mouth that could respond to L. L is done with Aleph, which is the authority. That's the ram's head with the horns. And the last letter that makes up the word L is a lamb, which is a shepherd's staff. And we think of that as far as leadership, guidance. It also protects us. It lifts us out of a ditch, like you lift a lamb out of a ditch if they fall in or something. It also can be used as a weapon to protect. And it also is guidance and steering and a support to walk on. So you have Yah reaching down with a protective barrier. You have a person who is engaged, and you have with God, who is guidance and protecting. I can't find anything that would be a negative reason not to want to be a Yisraelite, not to want to be considered a Yisrael. I'm just dumbfounded when you think about what it is, that it could be anything else. Anything unpleasant, or rather, but something that you would want to be. So, as far as I'm concerned, count me in. Now, that leads.
I agree.
So that leads me up to the tablets of stone, and these are called statements or words. And I'm going to do one more quick little letter with, you know, sometimes a word that I might bore people with this stuff, but I'm going to do one more time. One more thing with the debar. When you're talking about statements, words, word, we have debar, and that's a fabulously interesting word to me. It's three letters, D, B, and a R, and the D is a delete, and a delete is a pictograph of a doorway, an entrance into a home. It's also, you can think of it in terms of a Passover door, which is where we want to go. It's the doorway we want to go to, because to get to Yahweh, you have to go through the door called Passover. The bet, the second letter, the B sound, comes from a family home, a pictograph of a family home. That's a place where people live together harmoniously, obviously. And the third letter is an R, a Rosh. And for those who that are engaged in, those who are observant, you see, the whole thing is doing pretty much what we're doing today. I'm doing it rather poorly today, but nonetheless, he didn't say I have to be real good at it. He said, I want you to examine my words, carefully consider what I have to say, and study what I have to say and respond appropriately. So as long as we are engaged in that activity, Yah is engaged with us. He's, you know, it's a mutual beneficial thing for us to always be looking at his words and examining his words, and that's what we're obviously doing today. So, but Debar is actually what it says to do. It's a doorway with people thinking about, engaged in, looking at his story. And then we'll start with the statements written in stone when we come back.